This is Melissa Bartell, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you're listening to Tales from the Tub.
It is Friday, August 17th, 2018. This is a Jog Days of Podcasting entry. It's my birthday, but today I want to talk about someone else. And I'm going to warn you now that this is scripted, because if it isn't, I won't get through it. And as it is, I'll probably be crying in the middle. The title of this essay is A Stout-Hearted Man. There are people who enter your lives as visitors, stay a while, and then move on. And there are others who come to stay. For most of the first 12 years of my life, my immediate family was just my mother and me. Sure, she was married for some of that time, but it wasn't a happy or healthy relationship, and a lot of our time was spent in a mother-daughter bubble that must have seemed impenetrable from outside. And then, there came Ira. Decades have blurred my first time meeting him, but I think it was largely unplanned. My mother had met him some weeks before at some singles dinner, maybe through the UU church, maybe through Parents Without Partners. But that night, he called asking if Mom wanted to join him to see the famous mime, Marcel Marceau. He was bringing his son, and I was invited as well. I only have vague recollections of the performance. A pity, really, because Marceau was brilliant at his job. What I remember is that I was bored a lot. The sun had fallen asleep midway through, and I had no one to talk to. I was also hungry. I think at some point a bagel manifested, but it was seriously unimpressive, and the evening was capped off when we were pulled over on the way home. Ira wasn't drunk. He was weaving because he couldn't stay awake. Did I mention this was their first date? I expected my mother to blow him off. I expected her to date other people. I never expected that she would decide to marry him. She would tell you, if you asked her, that it was the most unromantic proposal in the history of such things. There was laundry involved. There was no exchange of jewelry. It was almost an afterthought. I boycotted the wedding. I was 11, and it was an act of rebellion. I felt unincluded and unimportant. I'm not sure what I thought would result from my action, but I knew I had to make a statement. I made a lot of statements in the early days of their marriage. What I didn't have the self-awareness or vocabulary to express then was that I felt betrayed. My mother, who had kept her birth name for all the years of my life so far, took his name when they married. I felt like I'd been brushed aside. I felt like I was the only one making compromises. And at the same time, I wasn't ready to trust that this person, this man, would treat my mother well, would treat me well, and would stay in our lives. There was a lot of adjustment. Ira wasn't used to people who yelled, or worse, yelled back at him. I wasn't willing to accept him as a parent. There were times when I begged to go live with my aunt or my grandparents or be sent to boarding school. There were times when I'm sure Ira wanted to walk away from the prickly little girl who was caught in the worst part of the transition from childhood to womanhood. But gradually, things changed. Every once in a while, Ira would buy a present. Nothing big, an album, a book, a set of awesome colored markers, just for me. And every once in a while, I'd engage him in conversation. By the time I got to high school, we had begun to form a solid friendship, partly out of convenience. I liked to spend weekend nights reading into the wee hours of the morning, and he liked to spend the same late nights doing recreational math. Once, he knocked on my bedroom door and said, "It's 2 a.m., shouldn't you be sleeping?" My response was to ask, "Shouldn't you?" Eventually, those late-night encounters turned into something else. He'd knock on my door and say, "Melissa, I have to tell you this awesome new thing I learned about the number 11! Or I'd knock on his office door and say, "I'm in between books and I'm making some tea. Do you want some?" Over the years, those midnight cups of tea turned into midnight chats about time travel and history and why mild cheddar should be eradicated from the face of the earth and how Jeremy Brett was the best ever Sherlock Holmes. At some point, we started a tradition of going to museums together, just the two of us, on Father's Day. We'd go to breakfast first or lunch after, and we'd get ice cream cones and not tell Mom. We went to the California Academy of Sciences and speculated about spending the night in the African watering hole exhibit. And we went to the Rosicrucian Museum and saw the mummy and the replica tomb. And in all that time, Ira never pushed me to hug him if I didn't want to. He never pushed me to call him Dad. He laughed at my snark and helped with my math homework, and I mocked his love of cheap kitchen gadgets bought from the discount store and his penchant for weird food combinations. Peanut butter and jelly and cheese. But there was real affection underneath it all. From the time Ira entered our lives, birthday and Christmas gifts were presented from him and my mother as a unit, with a few notable exceptions. When I turned 21, my mother gave me the then-current edition of Our Bodies, Ourselves, and that was just from her. And one year, after one of our museum trips, Ira gave me a pin, a brooch, that had all the animals from the safari exhibit attached as charms. He said it reminded him of our trip to the museum, and he thought I'd like it. I did. Later, much later, when I was planning my wedding to Fuzzy, he said that he'd give me away if I asked and be honored to do it, but that I should consider that women being given away was a tradition that dated back to when women were chattel, and was that really something any of us truly believed in? Fuzzy and I eventually eloped, and my parents threw us a party with a commitment ceremony several months later, and I caught Ira crying when Fuzzy put the wedding band on my finger. But through all of that, I still bristled whenever someone assumed he was my father, and I would correct them, adding the word step. On July 11th, hours after I came home from having the ACL, ALL, and meniscus in my left knee reconstructed, my mother told me that Ira had an infected gallbladder and they were considering surgery, but because of advanced kidney disease, his odds weren't good. Now, some of the timeline in this section is a little weird because I was hopped up on Norco for 2 weeks. Anyway, Ira had been sick for a while with different diagnoses. First it was cancer, then it wasn't, then it was again, multiple myeloma. He'd been vacillating about his kidney disease. It was a sudden diagnosis and he really hadn't had time to process before they wanted to throw him into aggressive treatment. And he didn't want treatment until they told him how much time he didn't have left, and then he got scared and agreed. And anyway, ultimately he had the surgery a few days later when the risk of his gallbladder bursting was too great to ignore. There were complications. There was a second surgery. Exhausted and diminished, he asked for treatment to end. And so we waited. I waited here in Texas because I couldn't go to the bathroom without help, let alone travel to Mexico where my parents retired almost 20 years ago. I waited, racked with guilt over not being able to be there to support my mother or to say goodbye. Ira's son was with them, and there was a near constant flow of texts and calls. But it wasn't the same. So I asked if I could write a letter, an email, and have my mother read it to him. So Ira used to sing this song. It's one he obviously learned in school. It's called Stout-Hearted Men. When he was singing it, you could see the ghost of his 8-year-old self overlaying his present-day self. And I mentioned that in my letter to him, adding that for years I was convinced it was the only song he knew. I also explained why I was so stubborn about the term stepfather. See, anyone can be a father. That's an act of biology. But stepfathers, good stepfathers, they choose it. They choose to deal with the adjustments and the fighting and the prickly little girls who don't know how to trust men. Every day, over and over, with no obligation, they choose to stay. Ira chose to stay until ultimately he chose to leave. He died exactly 3 weeks ago on July 27th. He was my mother's partner and lover and best friend and husband. He tried to be a good father to his son, and he bent over backwards to be a good stepfather to me. He was sometimes silly and sometimes serious. He'd insist that raw veggies and leafy greens had to be part of every meal, but then he'd meet you in the kitchen in the middle of the night to sneak a piece of pie. He coddled his dogs, made napping into an Olympic-level event, and gave generally useful advice. He was in the army once when he was young, though he never saw combat. And through all of this, he was the epitome of a modern, enlightened, mostly, loving, stout-hearted man.
Opening and closing music is a mix of Chris Zabriskie's The Oceans Continue to Rise from the Free Music Archive and a clip of whales singing off the coast of French Polynesia provided by Kivoy to freesound.com. The Bathtub Mermaid, Tales from the Tub, is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartel and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. For detailed show notes, including my contact information, please visit my website at bathtubmermaid.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold.